We are starting chapter 7 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, called The Ministry of Magic. Harry awoke at 5:30 the next morning as abruptly and completely as if somebody had yelled in his ear. For a few moments he lay immobile as the prospect of the hearing filled every tiny particle of his brain, and then, unable to bear it out, he leapt out of bed and put on his glasses. Mrs. Weasley had laid out his freshly laundered jeans and t-shirt at the foot of his bed. Why is he wearing jeans and a t-shirt to his hearing? Shouldn't he dress up a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
I would even dress up. And you know me. Harry scrambled into them. The blank picture on the wall snickered again. Ron was lying, sprawled on his back, with his mouth wide open, fast asleep. He did not stir as Harry crossed the room, stepped out onto the landing, and closed the door softly behind him. Trying not to think of the next time he would see Ron, when they might no longer be fellow students at Hogwarts, Harry walked quietly down the stairs, past the heads of Creature's ancestors, and into the kitchen. He had expected it to be empty, but it was not. When he reached the door, he heard the soft rumble of voices on the other side. When he pushed it open, he saw Mr. and Mrs. Weasley, Sirius, Lupin, and Tonks, sitting there almost as though they were waiting for him. All were fully dressed except Mrs. Weasley, who was wearing a quilted purple dressing gown. She leapt to her feet the moment he entered. "Breakfast," she said as she pulled her wand out and hurried over to the fire. "Morning, Harry," yawned Tonks. Her hair was blonde and curly this morning. "Sleep all right?" "Yeah," said Harry. "I've been up all night," she said with another shuddering yawn. "Come and sit down." She drew out a chair, knocking over the one beside it in the process. "What do you want, Harry?" Mrs. Weasley called. "Porridge? Muffins? Kippers? Bacon and eggs? Toast?" "Just toast, thanks," said Harry. Lupin glanced at Harry, then said to Tonks, "What were you saying about Scrimgeour? Scrimgeour?
Scrimgeour?
Scrimgeour. Okay, Scrimgeour. Oh, yeah, well, we need to be a bit more careful. He's been asking Kingsley and me funny questions." Harry felt vaguely grateful that he was not required to join in the conversation. His insides were squirming. Mrs. Weasley placed a couple of pieces of toast and marmalade in front of him. He tried to eat, but it was like chewing carpet. Mrs. Weasley sat down on his other side and started fussing with his t-shirt, tucking in the label and smoothing out creases across the shoulders. He wished she wouldn't. "Now I'll just have to tell Dumbledore I can't do night duty tomorrow. I'm just too tired," Tonks finished, yawning hugely again. "I'll cover for you," said Mr. Weasley. "I'm okay. I've got a report to finish anyways." Mr. Weasley was not wearing wizard's robes, but a pair of pinstripe trousers and an old bomber jacket. He turned from Tonks to Harry. "How are you feeling?" Harry shrugged. "It'll all be over soon," said Mr. Weasley bracingly. "In a few hours' time, you'll be cleared." Harry said nothing. "The hearing's on my floor in Amelia Bones' office. She's head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, and she's the one who'll be questioning you." "Amelia Bones is okay, Harry," said Tonks earnestly. "She's fair. She'll hear you out." Harry nodded, still unable to think of anything to say. "Don't lose your temper," said Sirius abruptly. "Be polite and stick to the facts." Harry nodded again. "The law's on your side," said Lupin quietly. "Even underage wizards are allowed to use magic in life-threatening situations." Something very cold trickled down the back of Harry's neck. For a moment he thought someone was putting a disillusionment charm on him again, and then he realized Mrs. Weasley was attacking his hair with a wet comb. She pressed hard on the top of his head. "Doesn't it ever lie flat?" she said desperately. Harry shook his head. Mr. Weasley checked his watch and looked up at Harry. "I think we'll go now," he said. "We're a bit early, but I think you're better off there than hanging around here." "Okay," said Harry automatically, dropping his toast and getting to his feet. "You'll be all right, Harry," said Tonks, patting him on the arm. "Good luck," said Lupin. "I'm sure it will be fine." "If it's not," said Sirius grimly, "I'll see to Amelia Bones for you." Harry smiled weakly. Mrs. Weasley hugged him. "We've all got our fingers crossed," she said. Right, said Harry. Well, see you later, then. He followed Mr. Weasley upstairs and along the hall. He could hear Sirius's mother grunting in her sleep behind the curtains. Mr. Weasley unbolted the door, and they stepped out into the cold gray dawn. You don't normally walk to work, do you? Harry asked him, as they set off briskly around the square. No, I usually apparate, said Mr. Weasley, but obviously you can't. I think it's best we arrive in a thoroughly non-magical fashion. Makes a better impression, given what you're being disciplined for. Mr. Weasley kept his hand inside his jacket as they walked. Harry knew it was clenched around his wand. The run-down streets were almost deserted, and when they arrived at a miserable little underground station, they found it already full of early morning commuters. As ever, when he found himself in close proximity to muggles going about their daily business, Mr. Weasley was hard to put to contain his enthusiasm. Simply fabulous, he whispered, indicating the automatic ticket machines. Wonderfully ingenious. They're out of order, said Harry, pointing at the sign. Yes, but even so, said Mr. Weasley, beaming fondly at them. They bought their tickets instead from a sleepy-looking guard. Harry handled the transaction, as Mr. Weasley was not very good with muggle money. And 5 minutes later, they were boarding an underground train that rattled them off toward the center of London. Mr. Weasley kept anxiously checking and rechecking the underground map above the windows. 4 stops, Harry. 3 stops off now. 2 stops to go, Harry. They got off at a train station at the very heart of London, swept from the train in a tide of besuited men and women carrying briefcases. Up the escalator they went. Through the ticket barrier, Mr. Weasley, delighted with the way the style, swallowed his ticket, and emerged onto a broad street lined with imposing-looking buildings, already full of traffic. "Where are we?" said Mr. Weasley, blankly, and for a heart-stopping moment, Harry thought they had gotten off at the wrong station, despite Mr. Weasley's continual references to the map. But a second later, he said, "Ah, yes, this is this way, Harry," and led him down a side road. "Sorry," he said, "I've never come by train before, and it all looks rather different from a muggle perspective. As a matter of fact, I've never even used the visitor's entrance before." The farther they walked, the smaller and less imposing the buildings became, until they finally reached a street that contained several rather shabby-looking offices, a pub, and an overflowing dumpster. Harry had expected a rather more impressive location for the Ministry of Magic. "Here we are," said Mr. Weasley brightly, pointing at an old red telephone box, which was missing several panes of glass and stood before a heavily graffitied wall. "After you, Harry." He opened the telephone box door. Harry stepped inside, wondering what on earth this was about. Mr. Weasley folded himself in beside Harry and closed the door. It was a tight fit. Harry was jammed across against the telephone apparatus, which was hanging crookedly from the wall as though a vandal had tried to rip it off. Mr. Weasley reached past Harry for the receiver. "Mr. Weasley, I think this might be out of order, too," Harry said. "No, no, no, I'm sure it's fine," said Mr. Weasley, holding the receiver above his head and peering at the dial. "Let's see, 6. He dialed the number. 2, 4, another 4, and then another 2. As the dial whirred smoothly back into place, a cool female voice sounded inside the telephone box, but not from the receiver in Mr. Weasley's hand, but as loudly and plainly as though three invisible women were standing right beside them. "Welcome to the Ministry of Magic. Please state your name and business." Said Mr. Weasley, clearly uncertain whether he should talk into the receiver or not. He compromised by holding the mouthpiece to his ear. "Arthur Weasley, misuse of Muggle Artifacts Office, here to escort Harry Potter, who's been asked to attend a disciplinary hearing." "Thank you," said the cool female voice. "Visitor, please take the badge and attach it to the front of your robes." There was a click and a rattle, and Harry saw something slide out of the metal chute and where returned coins usually appeared. He picked it up. It was a square silver badge with Harry Potter, disciplinary hearing, on it. He pinned it to the front of his t-shirt, and the female voice spoke again. "Visitor to the Ministry, you are required to submit to a search and present your wand for registration at the security desk, which is located at the far end of the atrium." The floor of the telephone box shuddered. They were sinking slowly into the ground. Harry watched apprehensively as the pavement rose up past the glass windows of the telephone box until darkness closed over their heads. Then he could see nothing at all. He could only hear a dull grinding noise as the telephone box made its way down through the door. After about a minute, though it felt much longer to Harry, a chink of golden light illuminated his feet and widening, rose up in his body until it hit him in the face, and he had to blink to stop his eyes from watering. "The Ministry of Magic wishes you a pleasant day," said the woman's voice. The door of the telephone box sprang open, and Mr. Weasley stepped out of it, followed by Harry, whose mouth had fallen open. We'll see what they do in the Ministry of Magic tomorrow.
I hope you like that kitty.
I love him so much. You're a sweet little kitten. Sweet child.